This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you've been looking around, it's starting to get really spring. The weather's starting to warm up. I think it was like 90-something degrees the other day. And what does that mean? We're having some different things going around the nation's capital, but not only here, but all around the nation. It's been National Parks Week. And if you didn't know, I didn't know about it. I started doing some research and started seeing about the Park Service doing a lot of amazing things in the various parks around the nation. And I started saying, listen, well, we need to have them on Fed Access. So I called and I have David Barner on the phone with me. He's the chief spokesman for the National Park Service. David, thank you for coming on out and talking to us about, one, the National Park Week, and also we're going to talk about the National Park Service.
Absolutely, my pleasure, Derek.
David, talk to us, you know, break down, I mean, what is going on? I know the week has been going on with National Parks Week, and I didn't know a lot of this stuff until you just kind of start, you know, breaking some things down. I start reading about what happens, but give a people an overview of what is National Park Week, when does it happen each year, and what does it involve?
National Park Week is a celebration we have usually the third week of April every year. It's sort of our get reacquainted with the Parks Week. It's a chance to bring in volunteers to clean up trails after the winter season. And we celebrate parks, all 394 parks across the nation. This year, our theme is Healthy Parks, Healthy People. We're trying to get people outside, off of the sofa, and maybe away from the computer for a while and get out and enjoy the national parks near you. The president has declared it at Park Week, and also an added bonus this week, it's a fee-free week in the park. So any of those parks, even here locally, like Great Falls Park in Virginia, that usually has a $4 entrance fee, there are no entrance fees through this weekend. That's a big deal, of course, in the West, where some of these fees are about $20 or $25.
Right. With you know, and break it down maybe by region, you know, as we kind of look, I mean, of course, we got a lot of stuff in the D.C. area, and I don't think people know. I mean, you just mentioned 394 different national parks or different facilities or different places that your organization is in charge of and that we can all visit. But maybe let's break this down by region, like, you know, maybe West Coast, the South, the East Coast, the Midwest. What are some of the different activities that people can probably get into?
You know, there are activities at all of these parks nationwide. Our big emphasis, as we said, is healthy parks and healthy peoples. And around that, we're having junior ranger programs at nearly 350 parks across the country, where you can bring the kids in and they can go through a short educational class and earn their junior ranger badge. When you think of the national park system, to me, it's easier to think in terms of the kinds of places we preserve. I mean, these are places that we as Americans have set aside for everyone to enjoy. About half of these parks, close to 200 of them, are your large scenic national parks in the West, the ones we actually call national parks. But in addition, the national seashores are in the park system. So here locally, we have Hatteras and Assateague and all the way down to Cape Canaveral. So all 10 of the national seashores are national parks, and there's wild and scenic rivers and national lake shores. The other half of these parks really preserve and celebrate America's cultural heritage. So they are national historic sites or Civil War battlefields or Revolutionary War battlefields or presidents' homes. They preserve our shared cultural history, like Frederick Douglass's home here in the district and Mary McLeod Bethune's house here on Capitol Hill. So you kind of think of the Park Service as sort of two organizations, one that preserves natural bugs and bunnies, if you will, the natural resource parks, and the other half takes care of Independence Hall and the Statue of Liberty and these historic homes nationwide.
Wow.
All of these parks are celebrating National Park Week through the weekend.
You know, you mentioned about Volunteer Day, and with all of that, you know, does the National Park Service, do you have a strong cadre of volunteers who, you know, who are out there not only for just the you know, cleaning up, you know, during Volunteer Day, but throughout the year,
absolutely,
you know, working? I mean, talk to us about the volunteer program and even Volunteer Day that's usually with National Park Week.
Right. Volunteers, we couldn't do our job without our volunteers. We have a program where you come in and register at a park as a volunteer. You'll typically see them out here on the mall or at parks in a yellow hat or a yellow volunteer shirt. Last year we had 180,000 volunteers nationwide.
Wow.
Working in
180,000? Wow.
It's amazing. They contribute tens of millions of dollars to the citizens through their volunteer effort. I think the man who runs the elevator to Washington Monument's a volunteer. A lot of them are school teachers who retired, people who may have worked in parks when they were younger, or seasonal employees, or people who just live in the local community, because a lot of these parks, most of these parks are in small-town America. I mean, our newest national park we just dedicated last week is Bill Clinton's home in Hope, Arkansas, in a very small community, and they're relying on volunteer efforts to lead people through tours of the Clinton home. And so, yes, volunteers are a very big effort for us, and we encourage people to sign up as volunteers and come help us out.
With the volunteer program, if anybody's hearing this, and I mean, it sounds as if, you know, 180,000, but given the acreage that you guys, you know, control and the amount of property you control, you're always looking for more people to volunteer. And they can do almost anything with the Park Service. I mean, they can, like you said, control the elevators all the way to maybe do administrative work all the
Absolutely.
Way to give tours, right?
Budgeting, everything we do. We have a volunteer writer-editor in my office here right now. She's a student and comes and volunteers and writes press releases for us. So you can do just about anything, and you can find these opportunities, and I'll keep mentioning our website, nps.gov, like nationalparkservice.gov.
And I'm looking at it right now. I would assume that's under the area about Get Involved.
Get Involved, yes. It's one of the most popular websites in the federal government. We get over 1 million hits a day on that website.
Wow.
Probably
wow.
Half of those are people doing travel planning, and the other half, interestingly enough, are students doing educational work. I mean, if you want to do history about the Civil War, Revolutionary War, or Bison, or anything else, we are one of the premier education organizations on our website. Because if you're going to study especially the history of the U.S. or the history of democracy, you can go in and find those sites related to African-American history and Hispanic heritage and colonialism, or the Civil War and Revolutionary War sites, Native American sites. It's all there on the Park Service.
You know, I'm looking, and you guys, I'm looking at the event calendar, and I'm looking at a wide range of events. Everything come from dealing with the Civil War all the way to coming up to, I think, on Easter, not on Easter, but on Monday, we also have the Easter Roll at the White House. Tell us about that. I mean, you're one of the people who's in charge of making that happen.
Yes, I'm the media coordinator every year for the Easter Egg Roll. You know, you'll see all the morning shows out there. And, of course, the White House is a National Park Service site. That's one of our parks. We're the people that keep the White House white.
Wow.
So if
people didn't know, it's the people who keep the White House grounds maintained are National Park Service workers.
Yes, you'll see National Park Arrowhead on most of their shoulders out there. And so we're putting on the Easter Egg Roll that's been around for over a century. We're expecting about 40,000 young kids to come through and enjoy the activities. I'm sure the president and his wife will be there, and a lot of special guests. They don't even tell us in advance who the special guests are, but yes, that's at the White House, another Park Service fine event.
You know, how does that happen? I mean, I haven't had the pleasure to go to the Easter Egg Roll. In terms of the 40,000 children and parents, you know, how do people get selected to come into the Easter Roll? And walk us through the day of events for those who don't know about it when they go to this.
Well, you know, they've opened it up. President Obama opened it up as a public lottery where you go online earlier in the year, several months ago, and sign up for tickets, and you're allowed, I think, 4 or 5 tickets as long as you have a couple of children under this specific age group. So it is very much a public event. People come, they're sort of timed tickets where you're out there on the grounds for about an hour and a half, and then another group comes through. A lot of activities. I mean, there is the actual
rolling of the eggs. It's not necessarily 40,000 at the same time. It's
correct.
Like it's broken up into
it's
different
broken
things.
Up.
Okay.
Yes. They're timed tickets, much like access to the Washington Monument. So
gotcha.
You're letting groups of probably 7,000 or 8,000 there at a time, and they have activities They change every year, but there's this classic egg roll itself where you roll the egg with a wooden spoon down to the other end, kind of a race with a group of five or six other children. There's egg hunts and egg decorating, and there's food classes, and they've incorporated yoga classes, and of course with this president there's some nice basketball hoops going on down there.
Sure.
There's readings by famous authors all day long. The woman who's written the Harry Potter series was there last year reading, and of course they bring in a lot of noted personalities and a lot of music. Fergie was there last year singing, so it's a fun activity all day long. I know I'm supposed to be there at 5:15 in the morning, and it runs till 6:30 in the evening.
So wow! That's amazing. I'll definitely make sure I get out there. And the lottery for that. I mean, I guess was this the first time this was kind of more of a public open lottery? I mean, if people want to find out about it.
Well, in fact, the second year, President Obama made it a public lottery.
Okay.
Honestly, it was always a public event, but you stood in line for tickets here in D.C., and so it sort of limited it to just people who were here available in D.C. By opening up to a lottery, nationally, people come to this event now.
Right, and they can find that, you know, in terms of for people thinking about this next year, they will be able to find that public lottery online? Where?
Yes, yeah, so just come to our website, nps.gov, and if you can't find what you need, you ask a question, and that will come to my office, and we'll take care of that.
Outstanding. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking about the National Park Service. We're talking about the National Park Week that has been this week past and also going into this weekend. And we're talking about all the great things that we have in terms of our culture, our history, and all the other great things going on in our national parks. We're talking to David Barna. He's the chief spokesman of the National Park Service. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Attention! If you're attempting to lose weight, please stay tuned for an important opportunity. In a 6-month clinical study, participants lost an average of 30 pounds without changing their eating habits or routine. Now, Sensa is conducting a market trial in this listening area. If you're trying to lose weight, you're eligible to try Sensa free for 30 days. Call 1-800-600-9067 now to request your free trial. Participation in this free trial does not require any dieting, pills, or change in lifestyle. In fact, we only ask that you continue your current eating habits. Just use clinically proven Sensa, the same weight loss breakthrough you've seen on Extra, Dateline NBC, and America's Newsroom. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. If you want to lose weight, you are eligible to participate in this market trial. For your 30-day free trial, you must call this number now. 1-800-600-9067. That's 1-800-600-9067. 1-800-600-9067.
Hi, I'm Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Join me this week for my special guest, Hans Hess, founder of Elevation Burger and EnviroCab. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pettleman, full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem. The answer? Too many leaks. Quest Security Solutions will help you pinpoint the cracks in your defenses and keep your critical data from seeping out. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Alan Hecht, Director for Sustainable Development from the Environmental Protection Agency, commented during the panel discussion, Beyond Green, Making Sustainability Sustainable.
There are 435 green labels out there. And the consumer world and consumers are saying, are these green? Is this greenwashing? What is green? And they are supportive of wanting to protect the environment.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword, Booz Allen.
Amid challenging budgetary and regulatory circumstances, government agencies are under increased pressure to improve operational efficiency and account for impacts to the environment, our natural resources, and society. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton have over 30 years of experience helping organizations assess, improve, and implement their sustainability initiatives, going beyond compliance to integration with and enhancement of the agency's mission. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program open season is here. Visit LTCFeds.com to find out who is eligible to apply with abbreviated underwriting. Long-term care is expensive and is not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the FeltZip offers a smart way to help protect your lifestyle and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Visit LTCFeds.com.
Cybersecurity runs deeper than information assurance. It includes mobile security, cyber innovations, forensics, collaboration. That's why last month the Defense Department increased its cyber budget request by nearly $1 billion. And it's why DHS is taking unprecedented steps to assume responsibility government-wide. Join FCA Bethesda on April 29th at the Bethesda North Marriott for its executive breakfast on the latest developments in mission-critical cybersecurity. For speaker lineup and to register, visit FCABethesda.com.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been talking about the National Park Week. This past week has been National Park Week, and also going into this weekend is still National Park Week, all the way going to Monday, where you have the Easter Egg Roll that's going on at the White House. That's going to be a very fun and interesting event for the 40,000 who get a chance to go out that way. I got to try to make it out that way one day too, David. I'm talking to David Barna. He is the chief spokesman of the National Park Service, and we're really breaking down what's going on with the National Park Service and what is going to be happening in the future as well. David, you know, you mentioned that a new park has just come online, which is President Clinton's home.
Yes.
You know, how and given that you have 394 facilities, how do you select what will become a National Park Service site? I mean, you know, how does that process go about?
And of course, this is really not controlled much by the Park Service. It's controlled by the Congress and the President.
Okay.
All of these parks are proposed by a member of Congress, and they work their way through the legislative battlefield like everything else in this town. Typically, Congress will come to us and say, we'd like the Park Service to go do a study on this property or that property. Right now we're studying Fort Monroe down here in near Virginia Beach. They'll ask us to go see if it's suitable for a park. By suitability, they mean if the government acquired it, would there be public access? You know, it's not surrounded by private property. Is it of national historic significance as opposed to state or local significance? So we sort of have a checklist we go through, and we make a recommendation to Congress on whether we think a property should be a park or not, and Congress does what Congress does. They accept our advice about half the time, and half the time they do what they want to do.
Okay.
But as we mentioned earlier, about half of these parks are large scenic national parks in the West and in Alaska,
mm-hmm.
and there's probably not many Grand Canyons left to discover out there. So most of these special studies are on the cultural heritage side in things that we're studying.
Right. So when something, you know, after it goes through the process and then the fight in Congress happens, and then, you know, let's say that, you know, a site has been chosen as a national structure, what happens from there? I mean, then does that automatically, then once it becomes deemed as a national site, that's when the Park Service begins kind of taking control and kind of figuring out, is there restoration involved or,
yes.
you know, how do we do? I mean, what's the process?
Exactly right. You go through a process through an authorizing committee, and they will authorize us to acquire a property, and we will try to buy that property or acquire it however we can. And then after you acquire it, you have to go through the whole appropriations process for being able to pay for them in the future. Right now, we have four or five properties that have already been authorized, let's say. I'll give you a couple examples. The Ronald Reagan Boyhood Home in Illinois, we have been authorized to acquire that property. We haven't been able to reach agreement with the person who currently owns it and is giving tours. There's always disputes on the value of these properties, and so we're trying to acquire the Reagan home, and once we did, you would see park rangers there giving the tour.
Right.
Another local example here is the new Martin Luther King Memorial is being built here on the mall. The way things work in D.C. is Congress will approve a commission, usually a private citizen, that says, you know, here's a commission for a World War II memorial or a Martin Luther King memorial or a Vietnam Veterans Memorial. They'll dedicate a commission, and the commission is charged with about a half a dozen things. Find a location and get it approved, and you can imagine how grueling that is here in town. Find a design and get it approved by everybody in town.
Which is equally grueling.
Equally grueling. Raise a lot of money, which is equally grueling.
Right. Exactly.
Build it, and on the day of dedication, it becomes another a separate park, mm-hmm. and basically you turn the keys over to the Park Service, and we keep the grass cut and do the maintenance and the interpretation of that site. And so we are set, of course, for the Martin Luther King Jr. National Memorial to become a unit of the Park Service this August 28th, 2011. And so the number of parks will go from 394 to 395 on that day.
And with all of that, I mean, because you're right, it was. I think this was kind of a federal and a number of different partnerships to build this one site in particular, as I've been looking at it. After it's built, does the funding to keep it going, is that now congressionally approved in order, or is it still a matter of that there's still kind of private donations coming in order to keep, keep the grounds or keep improving things? I mean, how's that partnership work out in terms of the funding of these
places? After it becomes a park, it becomes part of the appropriation process, and hopefully they would increase our appropriations a little bit to cover the cost of interpreting and maintaining that site. Most of these parks or sites continue to have a sort of private nonprofit organization that helps raise money for special events. And so that commission part of it will probably continue, so that they can have annual celebrations and raise some private money. But for the most part, that becomes an appropriated function. Another good example is we're coming up on September 11th with the 10th anniversary of the tragic events of September 11th.
Right.
So we are scrambling to dedicate most of the facilities at Flight 93 in Pennsylvania. And you'll see a lot of press about that coming up. And we have now acquired the property, and we've sort of finished stage one. Remember that plane crashed into the ground there, and it's basically still there underground. So it's hallowed ground. It serves as a cemetery and an honored resting place of the heroes of Flight 93. So we expect that has now been turned over to the Park Service, and we expect to dedicate a big piece of that memorial visitor complex in September of this year. But my point is that Flight 93 commission that Congress set up will continue to operate as we figure out what all the needs are for that site.
And so with this whole process, because, I mean, this is interesting, because I think a lot of people just, think that, people just, when you see a building or certain things that the Park Service runs, people just give that over. But you guys have to really go through a process, like you said, of negotiating with people to buy this property. And it's not always an easy process in terms of what you are offering and what the person said, I'm selling it for.
And it's not always, it's always controversial in the local area, and that's sort of the history of the park system itself. That even in those large parks in the West, there were considerable opposition to basically locking up this property from logging and grazing and mining. But over the years, the local communities that have grown up around these parks, the parks have become the economic engines and drivers of the local economies in these areas, and so the tourism dollars are a very big deal. We just went down the road of a potential shutdown, as you know,
right.
And we ran some numbers and found that this time of year in April, for example, visitors spend about $32 million a day in local park communities. Well, that's a lot of payroll. It's not only money in the parks, but most people stay in hotels and eat in restaurants and shop at gift shops outside of parks in these local communities. So you're talking about $32 million a day, and it adds up very quickly. On an annual basis, the parks cost the American public about $2 billion a year. That's our budget.
Okay.
And we manage 400 properties and 84 million acres, and we have about 20,000 employees. But that $2 billion in investments in the parks generates about $12 billion in local communities, supporting a quarter of a million jobs. And so the controversy on the value of parks sort of has gone away in recent years.
Wow. We're talking to David Barna. He's the chief spokesman of the National Park Service. We're talking about National Park Week. We're talking about the National Park Service as a whole. And we're talking about the number of different facilities and properties and different historic sites that they run that we can visit and take some time to enjoy our history and time to enjoy the shoreline and everywhere else in the United States of America. We'll be right back after this break. We're going to keep on talking. I want to go a little bit more into the National Park Service in terms of park rangers and people who work for the National Park Service and the great work that they do. We'll talk about that on the next segment. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit MatrixDirect.com.
Do you think you're getting your money's worth for your life insurance policy? Because if you're 40 and married and are paying more than $14 a month, chances are you're paying too much. Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. And if you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free no-obligation quote. Call 1-800-600-2804. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 75% on their term life insurance. See how much we could save you. It only takes 5 minutes, and you could save up to 75%, and the call is absolutely free. Call Matrix Direct, 1-800-600-2804. That's 1-800-600-2804. 1-800-600-2804.
The ComSatCom report, provided by Hughes.
The U.S. military is increasingly deploying airborne video surveillance applications to aid in a variety of operations, such as natural disaster assessment, homeland defense and protection, as well as military intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance missions. Only satellite networks can provide unconstrained coverage over land and water, enabling critical information to be shared in real time with command and control locations. Whether your mission is to secure our country's borders, operate UAV networks, or provide situational awareness beyond the line of sight, Hughes has the scalable airborne solution to meet your requirements anywhere in the world. Hughes commercial airborne broadband solutions are ideal for both fixed wing and rotary aircraft, are interoperable, can work seamlessly within your current operational network, and fit into your tightly constrained budget.
To learn more about Hughes technologies and contract vehicles, visit today's complete ComSatCom report on federalnewsradio.com or visit Hughes at defense.hughes.com.
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Dabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Dabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait until Saturday? Call Dabron & Associates Financial Services at 301-773-3923.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Here's to you, doctors. After all, yours is the very first face all of us see. You're who all of our mothers hope we'll someday grow up to be. It's you who we run to with a sniffle, a fever, or the odd case of mesenteric lymphadenitis. You fix our broken bones. You mend our broken hearts. You help us with everything from our allergies to, well, our zits. And though it may seem we sometimes don't appreciate all that you endure to keep us well, the endless years of schooling, the 14-hour shifts, the vending machine coffee, or actually having to read medical journals, we do appreciate you. Because when we're feeling our worst, we can count on you to give us your best. You're our healers. You're our heroes. You're our doctors. So from all of us to all of you, thanks. Kaiser Permanente. May you live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been talking about something that I think all of us know about, which are our national parks. But I don't think a lot of us know about some of the details and how much the park services are really a part of our lives, a part of our country, a part of our communities, and how much they have a bearing on our communities in terms of having a positive impact on terms of economic development as it relates to cultural development, historical preservation, and everything else. We're talking to David Barna. He's a chief chief spokesman of the National Park Service. And David, you know, over the break, you mentioned about a couple of things, and I want to talk a little bit more about Dr. King, but we also talked about the Civil War, the now I think what the 150th anniversary of
the
Civil
War. Right, sesquicentennial.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I'll learn how to pronounce.
I tell you what, let's go into, we mentioned the Dr. King Memorial is going to be coming in August. If people, when people go onto that site and they go and see what's happening there, what will they see when they come on in August or come anytime after that?
Well, and actually you can see most of it now. The beautiful Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial is being built on the Tidal Basin, which is that beautiful area that surrounds actually right in front of the Jefferson Memorial. It's that classic row of Japanese cherry trees, and of course we just had the Cherry Blossom Festival here. It sets in a perfect location, but midway between the Lincoln Memorial and the Jefferson Memorial. And I think that's politically selected by the family to represent Dr. King's stature in America. A beautiful, huge block of granite that has had the middle section cut out and sort of brought forward with a statue of Dr. King, very prominent, larger than the statue of Jefferson and larger than the statue of Lincoln in the Lincoln Memorial, facing the U.S. Capitol. Of course, this dedication will be on August 28th, the anniversary of his famous I Have a Dream speech at the Lincoln Memorial.
Okay. Okay.
In 1963. And the grounds, of course, are being landscaped and granite and marble carved sayings from many of his speeches, and it'd be a very, very moving place.
You know, you just mentioned something that is very interesting, how we at one point in time had different monuments that were more kind of the Greek statuesque type monuments. Are we moving away from that? Are we moving from that to more of something like the Dr. King Memorial or the Franklin Delano Roosevelt Memorial, where it has a different feel to it?
Absolutely, and I think the one that started that was Maya Lin's design of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. I mean, that was, people were appalled and aghast that you would have this black marble down in the ground, and it wasn't this Greek column Lincoln or Jefferson or Washington Monument type memorial. But over time, of course, the Vietnam Memorial has become one of the most moving memorials in America. And what's interesting about it is now the most visited monument in D.C.
Is it really?
More than the Lincoln. And it's just so moving, and provides that experience. And it has, you know, it has the words, it has the terminology, and of course there's some small statues there, but the placement of that as more of a reflective experience there really has changed, I think, the way monuments and memorials were built. And the Korean War Memorial shortly after that is downplayed very much, and so is FDR and Dr. King's. World War II is a pretty big statuesque and has probably elements of both, let's say. But yes, we're certainly away from the large Grant's tomb kind of building in New York that looks very similar to the Jefferson.
Kind of making our own identity,
right, the
identity of America, rather than opposed to maybe the identity of at maybe one point in time, more of a European identity, but now just kind of our own American identity.
Right, and I think it's kept the mall from looking too crowded. When you fly in, you know, in the National Airport in an airplane, you'll see the Washington Monument, Jefferson, and Lincoln. If all of those other ones were of that same scale, the mall would not have the nice vista that it has. And so it's helping us keep the urban space open, I think, for everyone.
Yes. With Civil War, 150th anniversary.
Yes, the Civil War started 150 years ago this month, April 16th, the sesquicentennial. We had we kicked off that commemoration at Fort Sumter on the 16th, the first shot of the Civil War. The next big event, we're going to track this for the next 3 or 4 years. The next big event will be here at Manassas Battlefield on July 21, where the first battle of Manassas was fought. But for us, and the Park Service has set up a wonderful website that you can get to from nps.gov. What we're trying to do is get away from the battlefield tactic and how many people, how many guys were shooting and whom or whatever. And we've expanded this into a theme of civil war to civil rights, because the Civil War really kicked off the civil rights movement. It's not an ending, as many people believe, that this, you know, we had emancipation and the slaves were freed and this was the end of the Civil War. The Civil War was about a movement that grew into the civil rights movement 100 years later in the 1960s. So what we're doing at these, on our website and these Park Service battlefield sites, which we literally have hundreds of sites in the park system that, that commemorate the Civil War, is we're teaching about what was going on in the community, what were the causes of the Civil War, and what happened after that as we moved from Civil War to civil rights. And I think that, that all Americans should get a taste for what's going on. This isn't about battle tactics. And you will, of course, see reenactors and all the visual things you tend to see with the battlefields, but there's a much deeper story here, and we're trying to tell that over the next couple of years.
With that being the case, and like you just mentioned, we're kind of moving away from the whole kind of dynamics of the battle and kind of, you know, taking a bigger reflective picture of the Civil War and its meaning, its overall meaning to, you know, how America has been built up over the past years since its ending. Is that where we are starting to go with it? Are people starting to look at it in that historical perspective now?
Yes, I think, you know, at some point you put the battle tactics behind you, but I'm not probably get nasty emails on this, because there certainly are a lot of people interested in the whole battle tactics and the military aspects of it. But if you think about even looking at things like our own past, even in Europe, if you look at the French Revolution and Napoleon, we don't tend to now at this point look at the tactics of how many people and how many guns and how many cannons. We really look at what did that controversy, what did that war mean for the history of Europe? What peoples were involved? Did it bring about freedom? Did it bring about democracy in Europe? And that's true of the Civil War too. We're trying to look at the perspective of what does it mean in the 200 year life of America. Well, what it really meant was, of course, it was a unifying force. It started to keep the country from celebrating, and ended as a war of emancipation. And what grew out of that over the next 100 years would be the civil rights movement that followed it 100 years later. And right. That's the story we're trying to tell.
When does this all start? I mean, and how long will it go?
It'll go for basically matching the 3.5 years of the way we'll end at Ford's Theater here in 2015, I suppose.
Okay. So we're talking about 3.5 years of possible events, you know, going through the whole dynamic of the Civil War.
Right, and although, of course, it will be tied to those major battles, because that's what we see, Antietam, Monocacy, Gettysburg, because those will be big national events. All along during the course of this, at all of our sites, we're hoping to engage what was going on with the local communities. I mean, you hear about Gettysburg, but what were the people that were just living in that little farm town thinking? You know, what was going on in that community? So we're trying to expand the message of the Civil War broadly.
We're talking about the National Park Service. We have on the phone David Barna. He's the chief spokesman of the National Park Service. We've been talking about National Park Week, the National Park Service, and a number of the different monuments and events that the National Park Service has going on, not only now, but throughout the year. And just speaking about the Civil War, speaking about the Dr. King that's going to happen in August, all these things are going on this year, so people definitely need to get out. We'll be right back after this break. We're going to talk about the National Park Service as a whole, the people, what they do, how they work, you know, who are the different people who work for the National Park Service, and how do they keep this process and keep our parks looking great and keep our history going. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arink.
British Prime Minister David Cameron says NATO is not moving towards the deployment of ground troops in Libya, even though a decision by several European nations to send military staff to assist rebels seems to suggest otherwise. Italy, France, and Britain are sending experienced combat advisors to help train and organize Libya's opposition forces. The U.S. is sending $25 million in resources. I'm J.J. Green.
There's a saying that lightning never strikes the same place twice. Airport operators know that's not the case, which is why they rely on Arink to provide the most advanced lightning warning systems available.
It allows personnel to get to safety, then back out on the tarmac in the shortest amount of time to keep you moving. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Hi, I'm Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Join me this week for my special guest, Hans Hess, founder of Elevation Burger and EnviroCab. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pettleman, full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
Attention! If you're attempting to lose weight, please stay tuned for an important opportunity. In a 6-month clinical study, participants lost an average of 30 pounds without changing their eating habits or routine. Now, Sensa is conducting a market trial in this listening area. If you're trying to lose weight, you're eligible to try Sensa free for 30 days. Call 1-800-600-9067 now to request your free trial. Participation in this free trial does not require any dieting, pills, or change in lifestyle. In fact, we only ask that you continue your current eating habits. Just use clinically proven Sensa, the same weight loss breakthrough you've seen on Extra, Dateline NBC, and America's Newsroom. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. If you want to lose weight, you are eligible to participate in this market trial. For your 30-day free trial, you must call this number now. 1-800-600-9067. That's 1-800-600-9067. 1-800-600-9067.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Is texting getting way out of hand? You know, I can't... Oh, please. Oh, that is funny. Where was I? Oh, yes, about texting. Pardon me. LOL, you are my BFF. So, like I was saying...
Switch to GEICO now and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number E enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With Quest's suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
It wasn't so long ago that collaboration was a bad word in government. Today, we know that the only way to solve our biggest challenges is for industry and government to work together to collaborate. At its upcoming Management of Change conference at the Homestead in Hot Springs, Virginia, ACT-IAC provides an ethical and trusted forum to explore solutions to our most pressing IT challenges. Be a collaborator. Register for Management of Change today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been having a real interesting conversation about the National Park Service, National Park Week, all the different historical monuments and historic sites that the National Park Service runs. Some very, very interesting stuff. How parks become parks. How do historic sites become historic sites? We're talking to David Barnum. He is the chief spokesman of the National Park Service. And David, you just told me something really, really interesting while we were on the break real quick. You've been with the Park Service for 34 years and you got several family members who are also a part of the Park Service family.
Right, and it's not unusual in the Park Service, especially in the West, where people will grow up and their mother or father are park employees, and a lot of the employees in the Park Service grew up as kids running around these national parks. I did not. I grew up in southern West Virginia, but it's fascinating to me to meet employees that, oh yeah, my dad was the superintendent of Yellowstone, and I, you know, grew up in Yellowstone. I just kind of, hard to fathom when you're living here on the East Coast that people do that. Wow. Yes, I have a brother who's a landscape architect at the White House and a son who's a park ranger here at the old post office tower, which is a Park Service site right here next to the on the mall.
Well, you know, you're kind of jumping into what I want to discuss about the range in which the Park Service has in terms of the people who work for the Park Service. I mean, everything from your park rangers, and I think that's probably the most visible piece of the Park Service, in which people see the park rangers walking around with that smoky bear hat out there, you know, either providing tours. But let's talk about the different people who work at the Park Service, starting with the park ranger. I mean, what are they like? I mean, what are those people doing? And what's the scope of the work?
Sure. There's actually two kinds of park rangers in the flat hats out there. There's several thousand of each kind. The principal one you'll meet are called interpretive park rangers. And these are rangers who meet and greet our visitors and educate. We like to say that they're teachers with a hat. They educate our visitors of the importance of that park. It might be a small historic site. It could be Independence Hall or Frederick Douglass's home, or it might be a large national park in the West. And so a lot of those rangers are trained maybe in biology or wildlife issues, or they're historians. The Park Service is the largest employer of historians in the nation.
Wow. So people say you know, majoring in history is a waste of time. It's not.
No, it's not. I mean, most of our people in our cultural resource side of the house are historians, and now increasingly it's interesting, those large scenic national parks in the West also have a lot of historic elements associated with them, whether it's the Native American culture that lived there first, and so history is a big deal in the National Park Service. But our employees do everything, because we have to have human resource managers, budget managers, carpenters, maintenance people. We have a big program how do you rebuild these historic forts, you know, one brick at a time as they fall down? So this historic preservation is a big, we have historic preservation training programs. We have archaeology training facilities here. We have underwater resources, because a lot of these things are coastal areas. And we're taking care of course, the USS Arizona Memorial in Honolulu and the forts down here in Key West. In the park system, the beauty of it is you can do about anything, and also you can move around. It's kind of like people who are in the military. You'll see people's resumes, and they will, in their career, have worked in 5 or 6 or 10 different parks all over the country, because they take your salary and benefits and move to a different park across the country.
Right.
Most of these large parks have park housing.
So you can be a park ranger living on site.
Right. We provide park housing in most of these parks in the West, and we have elementary schools for employees, and we have a jail. We've got about everything in these big parks in the West. And those are just areas that when you drive by, it'll say employees only. You don't even realize that there's a subdivision over there.
Wow. I think you were kind of talking about the two levels of kind of park rangers, because I've seen some park rangers who, you know, walk around and have more of a protective side to them.
Right, that's the other side, the law enforcement rangers. Here in D.C., of course, we have the park police, which are part of the park system. But in most parks, like the GW Parkway or Rock Creek, or even in the West, you'll find law enforcement rangers, and they go through the federal law enforcement training program. Remember that many of these parks are basically a small city.
Mm-hmm.
And we have law enforcement for protection of wildlife and resources, and also for our visitor safety. We provide a lot of search and rescue effort out there. So, yes, there are interpretive rangers, and there are law resource protection rangers, or law enforcement rangers.
Right. And breaking it down, so we got the historians. We've got two different types of park rangers. We've got architecture people. It sounds as if you have people who definitely understand, like you said, biologists. You have just a full range of a number of different employees.
Air quality, water quality. It's interesting. One of the things I found interesting is, especially as topics like climate change keep coming up, the national parks represent America's biological baseline. In other words, these are places that basically this is what the environment of this country looked like 200 and 300 years ago, and hopefully will still look like 100 years from now. So as the rest of the country becomes malls and shopping centers and subdivisions and highways, we find increasingly that industry and universities are coming to the parks to do those kind of basic measurements, because it's sort of, they're sort of stuck in time biologically. And so that's where people come to measure air quality, watch changes in vegetation and animals. So we've become very much the research place for environmental baseline data.
And I'm assuming that because you deal with so much of the environment, the Park Service is that leader in terms of kind of green and sustainable development and kind of using those resources the right way.
Right. That's one of our big initiatives that we're working on now is we're trying to make all of our future facilities sustainable and energy and environmental sustainable by using electric vehicles, recycling water. I was out at Denali National Park in Alaska last fall, and they have a visitor center that must be 30 miles away from nowhere, and it's completely off the grid.
Hmm.
It supplies all of its own electricity, all of its own heat, all of its own water. It's all recycled. It's not plugged into anything. And, of course, for us, there's a need for that because you don't want to run electric cables and gas lines 50 miles out into the wilderness.
So, you can destroy the landscape by doing that.
Right. So we're hoping to use, as the Park Service celebrates our centennial, by the way, which is coming in 2016, the 100th anniversary of the park system, we're hoping by then to become one of the big energy and environmental educators in America so that when you come to the parks, you not only visit the park, you see the kind of practices that you can do in your own community and your own home.
You know, that kind of leads me into, as we kind of close it out, that kind of leads me into this question. What is the future of, you know, the Park Service? I mean, where do you see the Park Service going? I mean, do we see possible more expansion of the Park Service, getting more sites? I mean, as the history of America goes.
You know, I think we could have a whole two-hour conversation about this topic. But the biggest issue in the Park Service right now is relevancy. How relevant are we to all Americans? If you go to national parks, especially the large national parks in the West, they are still a middle-class Caucasian visit.
Mm.
But America is changing very dramatically, whether it's African Americans and Asian Americans and Hispanic Americans, and they're not represented as visitors in our parks. There's probably some legitimate reasons for that. Those of us that grew up, I grew up here on the East Coast. When I learned history, it was the Eurocentric, the European history of democracy. And we preserved in America those sites of the Revolutionary War. If you grew up in Honduras or Brazil, you didn't get that history. You didn't learn that same history. And so they're not necessarily drawn to those same historic elements. But we contend that if, in order for democracy to survive, people need to know the history of democracy, and there's no better place to learn that in the National Park Service. So we are trying to diversify our workforce and diversify our visitors. You know, we get last year we had 281 million visitors to national parks.
Wow.
But they don't represent the diversity of America. Neither does the park system itself. It doesn't represent. I mean, we probably get shot for saying this, but we probably have enough Revolutionary War sites in the Park Service. We probably have enough Civil War sites. We've done a very good job, I think, there's numerous African-American sites. I mean, we just last week opened up the Ebenezer Church, Dr. King's home down in Atlanta, Booker T. Washington's home. But if you look for sites representing Hispanic-Americans or Asian-Americans, you're not going to find them in the park system.
That's right.
We just have not, as a society, celebrated the contribution of those people. So that's one of the other things we need to do is find those places that help bring our visitors in, and once we get them into those places that directly relate to them, we hopefully can get them into these large scenic national parks too. So that, honestly, that's where it's that relevancy, the relevancy of the parks being where you go get healthy, both spiritually and physically, is something that we really need to expand.
This is a conversation that we're going to have to keep on having, because I'm going to definitely have you back, David, because it's something that I believe in, too. And I think we have to have the diversity represented around our parks and around our whole nation with everything. So I'm glad you made that as a comment as we're leaving out of this segment right now. Thank you so much for coming on Federal News.
Let me make one quick plug.
Sure.
June 25th of this year, coming up here in a couple of months, is the 75th anniversary of Shenandoah National Park. And you can get down there in about an hour and a half. So if you're looking for a fun weekend, go down to Shenandoah this summer.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, David, for coming on Fed Access. You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. We've had on the line David Barner. He's the chief spokesman of the National Park Service. And so make sure you go out to National Park Week. Make sure you go out to a national park. We'll be back next week. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch.
Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.